is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How you doing, Rick? Been a long couple weeks for you, I know.
Yeah. A lot of highs and lows. I think the highs were that I've been doing some good local history. Orlando is celebrating the 150th anniversary of its incorporation this month. And so it's given me opportunities to do some good local history talks. I did one last week at the History Center that was sold out. And it's been a long time since I had done a sold out talk. And it was very affirming. Felt good.
That's great. Well, we're on US 98 making our way back to Florida. How's your little dog doing?
He's doing good. He has good days and bad days. He went to the groomer and they were a bit rough with him. So he limped around severely for a couple of days afterwards. But now I think he's back to just being his old lovable self.
We had to stop taking Calypso, our little dachshund, to the groomer because they use the lasso around the neck, the thing, because she hates baths. And with her IVDD, which is a degenerative disc disorder that's common in dachshunds, the last time we took her and they did that, she was just in pain for a few days. And and the next time we put it around her waist, I'm like, yeah, that's going to hurt her more. Like, that wouldn't want that. But, today's episode is about Florida dogs, and it's been on the docket for a while, and it's just serendipity that I had a dog experience not in Florida this week or late last week.
Oh, I saw. Tell us. That was such an interesting adventure.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. We were in Memphis. We pulled into Memphis and we were at this really quiet park that had a lot of quiet roads you go down to get there, and also an area of town that looked like it was a little impoverished. And so we parked and we decided we were going to go downtown Beale Street, get some food. And so we did. We went and we got some food. And on the way out, I noticed there was a dog laying on the sidewalk. And I thought, is he dead? I'm like, no, he's not dead. But I thought, your mind does things. And you think, well, he's, could be waiting for a kid to get home from day camp. Somebody, there's just so much land out there. That was my first thought, was he must be, such a good dog just sitting there, must be waiting. We came back from dinner and walking around, and it was a couple hours later and the dog was still there. Mm. And it started to work on me. And we got back to the camp and we're sitting in the camper, and Barry, he knows me. He goes, what's wrong? And I said, a dog. I can't stop thinking about it. He goes, well, we're going to go get it. We got to go get it now, because we don't want to do it after dark. We've got to find a place for him to stay. We have two dogs in our camper. We have a pickup truck, which will not fit three dogs that are, Calypso is a small dog. Banyan is not. We could not put another Banyan-sized dog in the pickup. So we leave the dogs. We go back. And what we see is this dog is incredibly malnourished. You could see his spine, his ribs, everything. He's got sores all over his face and neck. And someone has left him there with a gallon jug of water with the top cut off so he could drink out of it. And he was just the sweetest dog. Let us put him in the car. We don't know. He was a square-headed dog, boxy-headed dog. We didn't know what his experience was with humans. Let Barry pick him up. Put him in the car. We were going to take him to a vet that was open late, but they wouldn't take walk-ins. So we bring him to an emergency vet, which at this point, my mental calculator is just racking up what this is, but I couldn't leave him there. So we bring him in and they say, we can't keep him for the night. There's nothing acutely wrong with him. He's got some issues, but he doesn't, he doesn't have a broken leg. He's not in distress. And I convinced them to treat him for fleas and ticks, because at this point we know this dog is going to spend the night in the camper with us. And the dog did. They gave him the neck scarred. Poor dog. The first few hours, a dog with fleas has neck scarred on him. The fleas go crazy. But, we put our dogs in we have a little divider between the sleeping area and the rest of the RV. And Barry and the two dogs slept there. And I slept out in a recliner with this dog, because this dog, if I got up to go to the bathroom, the dog was like, where are you going? I'm going to come with you. I mean, it was like Velcro after 3 hours. While we were at the emergency vet, there was a woman who came in and it became clear she worked for Memphis Animal Services. And Barry says, why don't you go ask her where we can bring the dog? She saw what was going on and she says, look, we're not open tomorrow, but I understand you're driving through. You can bring the dog in. We'll work it out. She says, I want to be clear. We are not a no-kill shelter. You know, I will do everything I can if you, and she says, do you think you could write a little something about finding the dog? And I said, well, yeah. She goes, well, it has to be compelling. And that's where Barry goes, well, she's a professional writer. So she can, you know, she'd probably send you something nice. And so the next day, I had reached out to a pit rescue in the area. They didn't get back to me. We didn't have a choice. So I brought the dog to this animal shelter and, you know, he was just so happy to go for a car ride. It broke my heart. It broke my heart to leave him there. There was no physical way we could have gotten this dog home. I still check on him every day. We found out he's heartworm positive. I'll put a link to him in the show notes if anybody wants to adopt this dog. you know, it's just, with this episode going to be about dogs, it just really stuck with me. So all that said, we have a great guest today, Anna Cook from the New Barker magazine, which is a Florida dog magazine. We had a guy come up to me at a Tiki Agogo event and asked me, he said, I don't know if this is a fever dream, but I remember. And what he was talking about was Dogland. And Rick, you know about Dogland and Anna knows about Dogland. So I was hoping, welcome, Anna, talk a little bit about the magazine. But then I would love for you and Rick to tell everybody what you remember about Dogland. And some famous Florida dogs, please.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Kathy. The New Barker Dog Magazine had its beginning in the year 2006. We published quarterly. And I think a unique aspect of the magazine, of course, is its cover. Every cover is an original work of art by a different artist. So it is an homage to The New Yorker.
That is so, so fun. And so you're based out of Pinellas County, like Kathy, correct?
Yes, Safety Harbor.
Oh, you're I love Safety Harbor.
And we also, we actually started the magazine in Dunedin, which is affectionately known as Dogedin.
Is that because there's a lot of people with dogs there? Or
absolutely. It's a very, very, it's one of the most friendly dog towns in the country.
So when Kathy told me about the magazine, I was considering getting a subscription for my wife who just loves everything about dogs. She said, you know, that's her favorite thing in her life, I think, you know, is anything related to dogs. Actually, I was sitting at my desk this morning and we have new neighbors and she met the neighbor and met the neighbor's dogs and bonded immediately because they had dogs. So is there content that will be good for people outside of Pinellas County in your magazine?
Absolutely. We do cover the entire state. Central Florida is our second largest market in terms of reach and readership. And I'd love for you to have a subscription. It's $18 and four magazines will be mailed to you a year.
Honestly, I love supporting print. You know, I'm kind of, I guess at heart, still a print designer. I work on a magazine. I think magazines are important and there's something that will last. There's something tangible about having a print magazine in your hand versus reading something online. So I'd love to support you. So going to Dogland, I only know about Dogland because I'm, you know, such a fan of Florida roadside attractions. And I think I became aware of it through the work of Ken Breslauer, who wrote about it first in his first edition book on roadside attractions. And then he came up with a newer version that was kind of expanded. How do you know about Dogland, Anna?
My husband and I were in the tourist and attraction business for many years. I am a former Wikiwachi mermaid, and my husband was the director of marketing there. And so Florida attractions, you know, we've always, we love the history of it, of course, but the fact that we have been publishing a dog magazine, and I discovered Dogland back in 2022, as discovered it is existence because it does not exist anymore.
Yeah. According to Ken Breslauer, who wrote the book, it was there from 1960 to 1974 in Chieflin. And right. It's possible because, you know, I grew up in Gainesville and we would go to Cedar Key. It's possible I went by Dogland, but I don't have any memories of it. You'd think I'd remember because they had this big, giant dog sign out front. With the
A big Great Dane. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had visited. Of course, you know, I tell the story about how cheap my father was and he wouldn't let us go to any of these roadside attractions as a kid. But as an adult, I would have stopped there in a heartbeat. So what do you know about it that we could share? So I see, according to Breslauer, it was started by breeders, I guess. Is that what you understand?
Actually, a gentleman by the name of Bob Shetterly, he grew up on the farm and went to a dog show once and had this grand idea when he moved the family to Florida. And he got involved with a couple of members of the local kennel club, and he convinced 30 some other dog enthusiasts to invest in the attraction. Back then they had 11 dogs that were among champions that were valued at around $2,500 each. So it was a store for people to see the breeds. They'd meet the breeds, and if they fell in love with the breed, they would be able to connect with the breeder and purchase a puppy from the breeder. So it was a showcase for purebred dogs. And he had an idea to build a greyhound racing track on his property. There was a Kentucky Fried Chicken in the gift shop, so that was his claim to fame.
So you would have seen it on US 1998 and Alt 27. It says right on the brochure, and there's a picture of the brochure of this little girl, and it looks like she's just in front of a kennel.
That's probably what it was. It was a tourist attraction that was really a glorified kennel, a display case for purebred dogs.
And it's interesting to me, he wanted to do greyhound racing. I admit I've been to greyhound races before, but I don't, you know, I wouldn't do it again. I think I have more awareness of that it's not good for the dogs that I didn't have then. But I also admit I went to a rodeo and I could see immediately that, you know, the animals were not being treated well. But I didn't get that sense from going to, you know, greyhound race. You know, from a historical perspective, I'm kind of sad because I think it's part of Florida's history. But I just can't condone, you know, greyhound racing because you know, it's just not good for the dogs. Is that your sense too?
Definitely. You know, once you know certain things, you just can't unknow them. And we were part of the campaign to shut down the greyhound racetracks in Florida back in 2018. You don't see. A lot of people don't see what goes on behind the scenes. And it is a very controversial subject because there are people that just, like you said, it's a part of Florida history.
Yeah.
They loved going to the track and seeing the dogs run. I think the same thing, is true with horse racing now. Maybe it's just that the breeders are breeding too fast, too furious, not careful. And I mean, it's always been somewhat of a money making machine, but they're definitely putting money before the health and well being of the animals.
Yeah, that's just sad. To me, it's kind of like highlight. It was one of those things that was, you know, in some ways an excuse to gamble. You know, I went to highlight when I was mm-hmm. younger too. And, you know, at least, hopefully the players were treated well. And, you know, what my memory of highlight was that, you know, there could be a player who looked like they were the Michael Jordan of highlight and they would win every match at first. And you'd start betting on them, but by the end they were the worst player there. And it seemed like it all equaled out. So you couldn't come out ahead. So what is it? You know, there was a historic track right there in St. Pete. that had been there for a long time. I remember somebody wrote a paper about that. Is that gone, or is the building still used for gambling? Because that's kind of what happened to the one here. It's kind of in Seminole County.
Right. The building's still there, and it looks like the parking lot is a holding spot for Amazon trucks. And I am not sure. I'm pretty sure that it is shut down completely. I don't think they're even continuing any kind of gambling there, but I'm not 100% sure of that now that you asked that question.
Yeah. So let's go back to Dogs of Florida. The one that I wrote an article about Annie Oakley. And Annie Oakley wintered in Leesburg, and she was known for her love of dogs. And there was a story that she had a dog that was named Dave, and Dave would come with her to Florida. I think, you know, they've had homes in Ohio, which is where she was from. And she spent, you know, she was a snowbird and she wintered in Leesburg. And at some point, Dave was run over while she was in Florida.
Oh, no.
And, her husband was grief-stricken, and he self-published a little book about Dave the Wonder Dog. You can still find copies of it. I think there's one in public domain, actually. And there's great debate as to where Dave is buried. So there's controversy. I think the story was they wanted to put him in the local cemetery, but then they decided that animals couldn't be in the local cemetery. But as far as I know, no one's quite sure the location of Dave the Wonder Dog. But ultimately, I think it was one of the factors that led Annie Oakley to leaving Florida, and ultimately she died up in Ohio. But for a while there, she was, you know, coming to Florida pretty regularly. And that's perhaps one of the best-known dogs in Florida that I can think of. Do you know of any other super famous dogs in Florida?
I do. His name is Brownie. But back up on Annie Oakley, I did not know that story at all.
I'll send you a link. It was an article I did for the History Center magazine here. Annie Oakley was also in a big car accident around Daytona, and it took her months to recover. But she would do exhibitions where, you know, they had spring training baseball games in Leesburg, and she would do the thing where she would shoot pennies and playing cards and all that kind of stuff. So she was in her 60s at this point, long past her days of the Wild West show, but she still had it, you know, obviously. Right. And she used to love to hunt because she could get to the Ocala National Forest, and they used to hunt birds up there.
I wonder if that was her dog was a hunting dog.
Yeah, I think it was. I think
oh,
it was.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Brownie is one of the most famous dogs in Florida that probably people don't know about. And he was the dog of Daytona Beach. So interesting. You just mentioned Annie Oakley and Daytona Beach. But it was back in the 40s when he wandered into downtown Daytona, and Daytona Cab Company owner Ed Budgen met the dog, fell in love with him, and he and his employees built a dog house outside of the cab building, and just treated Brownie like a king. They actually put a can outside of Brownie's dog house to collect donations to help with his vet bills and any care that he needed. By the end of every day, they were collecting so much money that Mr. Budgen opened up a bank account in Brownie's name at the Florida Bank and Trust, which is now the Halifax Historical Society Museum. So I thought that was funny that he had an account, and he amassed quite a bit of money in donations.
And there's a whole website devoted to Brownie, and which is kind of remarkable. And there's a statue now for Brownie.
There is. There was a boutique opened in Daytona Beach in honor of the dog. And the owner of that boutique rallied to lobby to have the statue created and installed That was called Brownie's Dog Boutique back in 2016.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So yeah, there's a beautiful statue. It's one of the most visited dog graves in the country. It's another one of those tourist attractions. And if you're a dog lover, people know about it. He lived in Daytona for 15 years. He died. He actually died on Halloween, just of old age. Yeah. And so the townspeople, the mayor, actually changed the law. You could not bury anybody or anything in the park. And he changed the law in one day so that Brownie's body could be buried in the park.
That's a great story. Another thing that comes up when I think about dogs is, you know, sometimes when I'm going up to Gainesville, I'll take 441. And maybe you've seen this. There's a big pet cemetery kind of by Micanopy on the way to Gainesville on 441. Have you seen that?
It's got
got a big statue of like an angel, like huge, and its face is the road. And
I have to go check that out.
You know of any other kind of well-known pet cemeteries? Because we also have a place in a park near me that's kind of a memorial where people can get little plaques made for their dogs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there other famous, like, I hate to say pet cemeteries because everybody's going to think Stephen King.
Right. No, actually there is an official certified pet cemetery at Curlew Hills Memory Gardens in Palm Harbor. That is, it's a human cemetery and memorial, but they have a section devoted for pets to be buried there, and it's a lovely sight. You go there at Curlew Hills Memory Gardens every year. The president, Keenan Notke, has a memorial for the local canine service dogs, for the local sheriffs and police departments. And it's really a lovely, ceremony where the deputies and their canines from the various, law enforcement agencies come in and memorialize the dogs that have passed over the years. And Keenan created this memorial and a special section in the pet cemetery when he found out that the canines that had died, the officers just kept their ashes, you know, in boxes and just kind of stored them away. They didn't know what to do with them. And he felt that they needed to have some kind of memorial to honor the work that they had done and to give closure to the officers.
Now, I hate to take us outside of Florida, but there is a regional coonhound cemetery in Alabama, and it is only for coonhounds. I've been there. It's absolutely breathtaking view. It's on it's on a hill. You have to be able to prove your dog was a coonhound to have him buried there. And it is not fancy. There's not gravestones. People make their own markers, and there's a lot of dog collars. And mm-hmm. Very emotional, very sweet. But that is a regional. I hate to go outside of Florida, but if you're a coonhound owner and this is where you want your dog to go.
That's interesting. That's great. You know, back to Brownie. His grave actually disappeared in the 1980s. Somebody somehow sodded over it, and no one noticed it, and it just disappeared. And then around 1994, it was rediscovered, and that's when people started to pay attention again, and the owners of Brownie's Dog Boutique wanted to have the statue erected, created, and erected to honor the dog. So I thought that was interesting how, you know, over the years, something so endearing to a community just disappears, as is happening with development, right, in Florida.
Yeah, that's kind of a typical story for Florida, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I just found out that there's a page about famous dogs in history, and Dave the Wonder Dog, Annie Oakley's dog, is featured. And I guess Dave was actually featured in her act. She would breast an apple on his head and shoot it off.
Oh my gosh. Shoot it off. Oh my gosh.
That makes me very uncomfortable to think about.
Yeah, folks, we don't recommend you try that at home. She was a professional. She was a professional. Yeah, and also the place outside of Micanopy is called Garden of Love.
Oh, okay. I'll look that up.
There's a great article about it on the WUFT site. It's amazing because, you know, whenever you know, the sadness happens and, you know, we have a pet that crosses over the Rainbow Bridge. We have a spot in our yard and we get a little plaque made, you know, we order it online. But these are like full-fledged headstones they have at this cemetery. Just shows you how people love their dogs. It's one of those things I can think about when the world is going south or seems to be going south that always makes me feel love is the, you know, the unconditional love you get from your pets.
And the death of our pets, when we started the magazine almost 19 years ago, we would go to events and there would be businesses that serviced, death, whether it was, cremation, stones, urns, but I would see people give a wide berth to those tables. They felt like, I don't want to talk about it. It's not going to happen. If I go near there, my dog's going to die. And slowly but surely, I think like in the last, even last, this past year, year and a half, people are starting to talk about death and the grief of their pets, as it's becoming a much more common thing. I think we do need to talk about it more and make it normal to talk about our grief of our pets. A lot of people who don't have pets, think it's odd that you could grieve over a dog. It's just a dog. You can get another one. And people are being noticed now. We see you. We know that you're grieving, and this grief is real.
Yeah, they're family members. I mean, it's the loss of a family members. And, you know, in some cases, they might show you more love than actual real human being family members. So it's a huge, huge loss, you know, that continues to stay with you. You know, mm-hmm. And the, you know, the grieving process you would with a human is the same as it would be a dog.
I've had people say to me, I've cried more over the death of my dog than I did over the death of my mother or my father. Is there something wrong with me? So people are, you know, there's a sense of guilt that, oh my gosh, I'm grieving more for my dog than I did for a family member. But like you said, the dog is a family member.
Yeah.
And they depend on us 24/7 for 10, 15, 16 years. And so when they go, that's a huge hole in the heart.
And they don't, you know, they're with you. Like my dachshund is 18. You know, she has never once over the Thanksgiving table tried to talk about politics. She has, you know, she's never gotten arrested. She's never told me, you know, what I'm doing wrong with my life. I mean, they're
no judging.
It is so much easier in so many cases to love a dog than it is almost anything else on the planet. So, of course, you're going to love very deeply and feel deeply. And Rick, I want to mention this because I think what you and Julie do, what you and your wife do, is so special. I could not do it. Do you not go out of your way to adopt older dogs when you find yourself without a dog?
Yeah, we find ourselves drawn to them. Because you know, this is not a Florida thing. We went to Nashville and we rented a car specifically go to the senior dog sanctuary that's just east of Nashville. And God, what a remarkable place. You know, it's all based on contributions, and the dogs are treated like kings and queens the rest of their life. So, you know, they wash the bedding every single day for these dogs. A lot of them are blind. Some of them are missing limbs, but you know, they have better facilities than, sad to say, some people have.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the people who run it believe that, you know, that these dogs deserve to be treated well, you know, their final days of their lives. And, you know, there are, some people will take the dogs out of the shelter and bring them home for a while. And then, you know, ultimately bring them back. But it's crazy, you know, they just like the amount of meds, you know, they have to get all the meds right. And they have vets on call, and it's quite a facility. And it inspires my wife. And, you know, there's something about senior dogs that are really lovable to us. They sleep a lot. they tend to be mostly mellow, although with the last Chihuahua we had barked at people and other dogs quite a bit. But that's, I think, part of the breed. The dog we have now is just lovely. But, you know, we try to accept the fact that it's not going to, you know, we're not going to have 15 years with these animals. But we're going to do our best to make every day a good one in the time we have it.
That's fantastic.
That really is.
That. Yeah.
I don't think I have that in me. I wish I did. Because I agree, you know, senior dogs get chronically overlooked at shelters. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to. We have a Chihuahua rescue in Gulfport that the woman who originally founded it, her big push was please adopt the older dogs first. Please adopt an older dog. That was mm-hmm. her, you know, and she pointed out that most of the Chihuahuas that they had in the Chihuahua rescue were older because somebody would die yeah. and think that their kids were going to take care of the dog, and the kids were not aware that they were going to take care of the dog. So mm-hmm.
that was know, limbo, I mean, right? Limbo Chihuahuas?
It was. Yeah. This is going back a couple of owners, mm-hmm. or the founder, not the most recent person who ran it. She was a big, Linda, she was really a big advocate of it. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I really thought about it. And you know, she used to say, you know, if you're older, if you're in your 80s and you want a dog, adopt an older dog. You won't have to housebreak it. You won't have to worry about anything like that. And you know, there's not a good chance that dog will outlive you, which is a grim reality. But
yeah.
As we start to age more as humans, we have to think about, if you had a pet when you were 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, you're probably still going to want a pet when you're 80 or 90. And you have to think about what that looks like when you're not there.
Well, and, you know, my mom and the boyfriend she had at the time adopted puppies, you know, when they're late in life. And, you know, so my mom's 85 now and the dogs are old, not puppies anymore, but their lifestyles aren't consistent. These dogs have tons of energy. My mom does not. So mm-hmm. I think the value of adopting an older dog when you're an older person is you have consistent energy levels. So it's you know, getting to a point where it's more and more difficult for my mom to keep up with the dogs because, you know, fortunately they're little dogs and they can't pull the leash out of her hands, but they could easily pull her down. And that worries me.
Or trip.
Yes.
I worry about that too. And
yeah.
The senior dogs at shelters, they are so sweet. Most that I've met are just, that's not where they should spend the rest of their lives, no matter how much time they have. They need a warm bed. And what that bed looks like, anything's yeah. better than the shelter. So, I mean, you know, if you have the dog for a year, 5, 6, 7 years, who knows? They really, they are just so loving, so chill, so gentle.
You know, one of the most heartbreaking things I did, I was working for an alt weekly paper, and we have this, and Anna, I'm sure you've heard of them. We have this amazing rescue in Pinellas County called Suncoast Animal League. Mm-hmm. And one of the founders was the former director of the Humane Society of North Pinellas. And when he was with the Humane Society, he was a big advocate in the 90s of fostering, which is not something that was widely done as it is today. And so Suncoast Animal League, they have this network of fosters. They have almost no dogs in cages.
Wow.
They get everybody out to a foster. And one of the most heartbreaking things I did, there's an area of Florida called Redlands, which is near Homestead. And people in this area and people in Miami-Dade so do not trust Miami-Dade Animal Services that they would rather, and they do, take their dogs and dump them in the farms there. And Suncoast Animal League worked with Miami-Dade Animal Services and Redland Rock Pit Rescue. And I went down for a day and they got a big trailer and they collected 73 dogs that had just been dumped by the side of the road.
Oh my God.
It's brought them back.
Terrible. It's a never ending cycle. Oh, it's getting worse. There are German Shepherds and Doberman Pinschers being discarded in the Redlands.
I mean, it's after our incident in Memphis, Barry has asked that I not look at the side of the road for the rest of the drive home. But I just can't get that dog out of my head. I can't, I can't imagine who does that. And the sad thing was, at the time when the rescue was working with Miami-Dade Animal Services, their deal was if the dog has a collar, you cannot take it. And so I was following them as they went around. And at the time, I had a little red Volkswagen Rabbit. And this beautiful German Shepherd jumped in the front seat of my car when I stopped. And he didn't want to get out. He wanted to go for a car ride. And Rick had to say to me, we can't take him. He's got a collar. Somebody didn't take us.
That was Barry. That wasn't me. Is that another Rick?
Oh, Rick Shabity, the head of the... Suncoast Animal League. I'm sorry. He was leading it. It's just, I understand the whole desire to not want your dog to end up in a shelter, but they don't go find their way in the wild. Mm-mm. They don't, that dog in Memphis was sitting by the side of the road with that cut off half gallon thing of water waiting for somebody to come back for him. I hope this dog finds a home. And I it's great to talk about these famous dogs in Florida and all this. And Florida is such a dog friendly place. I mean, we've got Gulfport has a dog mayor. I don't think we're the only place in Florida that does, but there's so many dogs out there. So I hope at the end of this episode, you will go check out the show notes and, do like Rick does, or like other people do, go find a dog to adopt because there's no shortage of dogs. That's what I wanted to open the episode with today, because that was something that just happened and we'd already planned this dog friendly, dog forward episode. And if you do go to Memphis and adopt this dog and send me a picture, I will give you a free podcast subscription for life, the top tier.
Yeah.
Totally.
We will rain Floridiana upon you for the rest of your life if you adopt this dog. You'll be getting books and postcards, you name it. Maybe some ceramics.
And we know that he's good with other dogs. He wasn't neutered. So he was a little curious about what he could hump. And both of our dogs were like, no, that's not going to happen. But that's an easily fixable behavior. But he was not aggressive with our little dog at all.
I thought of another famous dog.
Yes. Okay. Let's hear about a famous dog.
So there was around World War II, there was a little dog in Orlando called Pinky. And so Pinky had a whole wardrobe that Pinky would dress up and dance around with in order to gain publicity for selling war bonds. So the History Center has this wonderful collection. And I think the owner was somewhat eccentric. She liked to dress up herself. And so there's these great pictures of Pinky the War Dog, Wonder Dog. So the History Center did this series of, they have a sticker machine in their gift shop. And they were going to call them animal angels. And these were famous animals throughout Orlando history. So Pinky has her own sticker you can get there. But she's the only dog, because I think the other ones are Barney the Buffalo, Billy the Swan, and Gus the Camel.
That's the camel. Okay.
So we love our animals. I mean, that's a big part of Florida history. And I was thinking of, wasn't there water skiing dogs? I kept thinking I've seen a picture of a little poodle being pulled around on maybe at Cypress Gardens.
I'm not familiar with that. No. Surf dogs. We have, Florida has a couple of surf dog competitions every year.
Like Spuds McKenzie?
Well, dogs that actually surf on boards.
Wow.
Yeah.
With an owner or without an owner?
Both. And it's a competition.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, they have a spot during the event where beginners can try it, but this is for experienced skiers, or not skiers,
surfers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And Rick, I also, you know, you mentioned the sanctuary in Alabama.
No, it's Tennessee.
Okay. There's one in Mayaca City.
Really?
Dante's Den Animal Sanctuary. And the founder, Marcia Panucci, bought the property. It's 50 acres of just pristine peacefulness, and built a state-of-the-art facility to house dogs whose owners can no longer take care of them. Maybe the owners passed away, or they're in a assisted living facility. She calls them lifetime care dogs. The dogs will be taken care of for the rest of their lives. And you mentioned the rows and rows of medications and food, you know, for each dog.
Yeah.
It's how they manage it. It's a beautiful facility. It's right off, State Road 70, which is crazy in terms of traffic and construction. And then you pull off this, down this dirt road, and suddenly you're in another world. It's so quiet. It's just unreal how peaceful it is out there. So that might be a spot, Kathy, that you could go visit.
Going to visit senior dogs. I don't know. I don't know if I have it in me.
They're well taken care of.
I may have a road trip in my future. This is something my wife would love to visit for sure.
Yeah. It is. It's a beautiful facility.
I'm not allowed to adopt any more dogs because those two dogs are my mother's, are going to come here sooner or later. And
good. That's good. Yeah.
That's good and bad.
What kind of dogs are they?
They're Maltese.
Well, they're not big.
They're yappy. They're very yappy.
They have lots of feelings.
They have feelings and they express their feelings. They're lovely. I mean, they are so lovable. The one, I call it the bird dog because it's about the size of a bird. It's like a pigeon. It's about that size. It's so tiny. You know, it would have been the run of the liver. And he's adorable. He loves to, you know, stand up on you and look you straight in the eyes, you know, with his eyes about 6 inches from yours. And he dances and sings and it's adorable. And it's hard not to love them except for when they're won't stop barking. So they're not as mellow as like a senior dog yet. So, but you know, that's the thing. You accept the dogs where they are. And I just want to add, you know, if you accept a senior dog, there is responsibility. You need to take care of that. And that often, you know, you often have to buy meds. So, you know, don't do it if you're living paycheck to paycheck, because you want your dog to be comfortable. And, you know, Kathy and I both talked about all the meds our dogs take.
Yep.
Yes. It's a lot of, it's not, an aging dog is not for the weak of heart or the weak of wallet.
No. So. It's a commitment, but you know, it pays dividends, you know, tons of times over. It's just, you can't put a price on love, really.
No. And, you know, I want to say too, if you cannot afford a senior dog, but you do want to do something, there is a shelter near you that is looking for a foster parent. I promise you.
Fostering is there's such need for fostering at shelters, at rescue groups. The rescue groups can't pull the dogs from shelters without fosters.
Right. And they pay for the food and the medical care and the meds. I mean, so you just know it's not a forever thing. You're not going to have that dog forever, but if you have 3 months in your life, you know, it's I can't say enough about it. So enough good about it.
It's an important aspect of animal sheltering and rescuing.
Can we just ask her a little bit about Wiki Watchy? We don't get mermaids on here very often.
Yeah, you really buried the lead with that, Anna. And by the way, I was a mermaid.
which puts you into royalty in my book, Florida
Yes,
royalty.
You're Florida royalty if you were a mermaid.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It really was.
And so you're a good swimmer. What's it like going through the tunnel to come out in the spring?
You know, at first it's very, very scary. I think it was like a 20-foot drop. And then a 40-foot horizontal exit into the spring. And, you know, as a new performer, that's probably the most scary aspect of training. But over the years, it was easy. It was nothing for an experienced swimmer to take one breath and go down 20 feet and go out 40 feet in one breath. But it was dark.
Wow, for what it's worth, my understanding is they no longer use the tunnel.
Oh, really?
That's what I think I've heard. I do know one other retired mermaid, or know of one. I work with a woman whose mother used to be a mermaid. Uh-huh. So it's an elite group. Yeah. Do you miss it?
You know, I miss.
It's okay if you say no.
I miss the youth. I miss. You know, it was fun performing, and we were so young, we were so vibrant, but the water was ice cold, and to this day, my shower has to be scalding hot for me to get in. I still have the memory of the ice cold water jumping in.
Yeah, this whole thing, Florida Springs, when they're like, oh, they're a constant 72. I'm like, that's my idea of hell.
Yeah, I remember the last time I swam in Green Cove, you know, I was out of the water half an hour and my teeth were still chattering.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
It's crazy how it chills you. I mean, it's a chill unlike anything other. You can see why people loved them so much before we had air conditioning here. It would probably be the only way you could get cool in summer in Florida.
It brings your blood temperature down for sure. I mean, we would swim during season. It was nothing to swim 4 or 5 shows a day. Normally it was a 3-show day. And we had other responsibilities, but when you're swimming that many shows, you never get warm throughout the day. You're constantly frozen.
Yeah, you don't have time to get warm.
No.
And, you know, and a former lifeguard here, I will tell you,
yep,
it is possible to get hypothermia in any water that is, I think, below 96 degrees, whatever degree. I mean, if the water's 90 degrees and you stay in it long enough,
right,
it will lower your body temperature to where you are in hypothermia. Now, it just happens a lot faster the colder the water is. Most of us don't stay in the water that long. But yeah, that's not for the people laugh about wiki-watchy mermaids until you say, well, you know, think about what they're doing. The temperature of the water, fighting a 5-mile-an-hour current, although right. I do understand y'all know where the current is and you can kind of dance around it. But it's not fun and games. That's hard work. They have to be scuba certified now to be a mermaid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not easy.
So I think we've bookended our show starting with Dogland and going to Wiki-Watchy, you know, from one roadside attraction to the other, connected
Absolutely.
By US 19. Is it 19? No,
yes.
40, it's uh-huh. 41. Is it 19?
19.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Look at that. It's like we did it on purpose.
It was all just serendipity with the dogs and mermaids. Thank you for being on here, Anna. And we will definitely, listeners, have a link to the new Barker in the show notes. You can go to their website, but you can also subscribe. And I know that all print needs your help. So please,
thank you.
Absolutely. Do that.
And thank you so much, Kathy and Rick, for having me on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
It really has. Thanks so much. Before we go, folks, we do want to thank our active supporters who support our Coffee in Florida habit. Shall I just get right into it, Rick?
Jump in there.
All right. Stephanie Hewley, Brad Sager, Brian Woodall, Bet's Boys Adventure, Elise Smith, Carol Miller, Leslie Hallweg, Davita Breyer, Natalie Zachrick, Angela Connolly, John Bowne, Ryan Worthington, and Michael Gargalak. Folks, you can email us at any time with questions, Kathy, C-A-T-H-Y, at floridaspectacular.com. And we also want to give a shout out to somebody who sent us a one-time donation of a sizable amount, and that would be the listener known as Sulcata Grove. They didn't tell me whether or not they wanted their names used, but, they email us. So do a lot of you who support the show, but you don't have to physically or financially support the show to send us emails. So if you want to know something about Florida, we are your people. Please reach out to us. And with that said, we will see you next week on Florida Spectacular.
Bye.